Yoni, I saw the wine.
And it opened up my eyes.
I saw the wine. I'm Jessica.
And I'm Yoni.
Welcome to the Kiddish Book Club.
L'chaim.
Yonit would like everyone to know we do actually drink the drink.
Oh, yeah, of course. We take it very seriously. We l'chaim, and then we actually drink for a good few seconds off recording.
But we also make a bracha and take our first sip before we start recording at all.
Oh, yeah, of course. Yes. If you wondered about that, we do say our brachas first.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Well, we have to sample the drink. I mean, that's we can't really just important. Trust that the drink that was made for us by my bartender husband, which was from a you bought a book for me for my birthday.
Yes, I did.
Called
Are You Afraid of the Dark Rum? A 90s cocktail cookbook.
Oh my god, it's so funny.
The Pickelodeon is in there.
And this one that we're drinking is called I Saw the Wine.
I Saw the Wine, yeah. So there's some good ones in there. The names are punny and the drinks are delicious. Mm-hmm. And it's really, I figured it was good for you.
The names are punny. First of all, you were just telling me, and I'm reaping all the benefits. '90s. You were just telling me about some books that had puns in their names.
Oh my god, yes. So I read a lot of books that have pun names, and sometimes there are a lot. So this one is called Bad to the Crone. So there's a specific genre, I think.
Do you think it's witch books?
Yeah, the witch books are particularly...
Like which is which?
They're pretty... I mean, witches. I don't want to say if they're good or bad, but... Oh, Sinister Sprinkles. So the bakery mysteries tend to have a lot of puns in their names.
The kind of puns that show up on the Hallmark Channel.
Yes!
I was going to say, you have this very... Yes. Interesting book list you're scrolling through, and then like I am Malala.
I'm eclectic. Yeah. I'm just gonna say that's me. There's a lot of, I'm looking at these books and it's like, oh, Stiletto.
Yeah.
And Before We Were Yours, and well, you have Jim Butcher, and
we just figured out though that the way that we always cross over is speculative.
Yes.
As a general rule.
You and I overlap a lot there. Yes.
We may not necessarily read the same genres that are speculative, but the concept of there's something going on here that isn't explainable by nature.
I like those. You know, because I have mentioned before that my reading is very escapist.
Mm-hmm.
And so you can't get any more escapist than a witch in her 20s who discovers her magical powers and then meets a super hot shapeshifter and has to learn how to, you know, hold her own.
Right. And for me, it's when I was reading recently, I'm reading Alice Hoffman's Faithful. And it's a little more dark. It's okay, girl in a coma, and people go there and things good happen for them, like almost like if they hold her hand. But meanwhile, her best friend who survived the crash is like seeing things. And I'm not done with this book yet, but the speculative nature that I'm talking about is a little different than the speculative nature that you're talking about. Right. I'm talking about like there's a mystery, and it's not a mystery in town that has everyone united. Mine is more like, why do the planes keep crashing on this one city? You know, by Judy Blume. That's the kind of speculative I'd read. And Dara Horn.
Yes.
Oh, my gosh.
Yes.
I just finished this book, the one that is the Joseph retelling. And no one told me. No one warned me. And by the way, I know it's a Joseph retelling because she says it in her acknowledgments. So I was right. Okay. Guide for the Perplexed. By Dara Horn. Have you not read this?
I have not read that, but I'm excited because I liked the other book I read from her. And so she's on my list.
Every time I read one of her books, I open it up, I read one line, and I turn to my husband and I go, come on, this isn't fair. Some people is this her first draft and it's that good? Obviously it's not. There's no such thing as someone publishing, but I'm sorry. It's so good that you have to believe sometimes that someone is innately that talented on their first shot.
Right.
And that's, to me, Dara Horn.
No, I actually prefer to think that it was like 20 iterations.
It's less intimidating that way.
No, but it also like, I want someone who put work into it. There are definitely books I've read where I've been like, you could have used a revision or two.
So that's how I felt a whole deep into the Sarah J. Maas series.
Oh.
I was just reading like book 5 or 6 of Throne of Glass. And I thought it was over. And I realized there were like 10 more pages.
Oh.
Like, what's going on? And every single line for the last 10 pages of this book could have been the last line of the book. Like, it didn't need to do
continue.
It continued. Mm-hmm. And it was like, okay, we get it. The book is ending. And then I turn the page. It's still more. And we're going. And the story's over. Why are we talking? What are we reflecting on? It's almost like because she was up to a certain point that she was less forced to revise or edit.
Oh, interesting. Mm-hmm. You're famous. Just keep going.
Yeah. You're famous. Just keep going. They're going to buy it anyway.
Word count up.
Right. I mean, her other books are verbose.
Mm-hmm.
But this was the first time that egregious. I'd seen, yes, an egregious, like, maybe whoever did her edit just kind of didn't finish.
You know, it's interesting because I had the opposite. I'm reading this amazing book, Blade So Black, that I talked about.
Yeah, you like that book.
Last time, it's an Alice retelling. You know, so I'm halfway in it and I'm loving it. But I will say there's one scene where we're introduced to her first trip to Wonderland. And then I don't know, like, was I doing something else in the middle? But like, I feel like I turned the page and she was like a year into her trip. So I was like, wait, did I, like, what happened? I couldn't tell if the editing was slightly off and like there was a time jump on purpose.
Were you missing pages?
Did you check?
Because that's happened to me before.
And it's not an arc and it's not whatever. And I'm reading, I'm like, so I need to go back because I think that the rest of it's rock solid. So then there's just that one weird place. So I have to like go back and
figure it out.
Yeah.
By the way, tangent, not that we've never done a tangent before.
Gosh, how could you?
But Blade So Black is a book I've seen a lot lately because of this big screw up. Did you see the big screw up?
No.
Well,
yes, of course. Oh God, Barnes & Noble.
Barnes & Noble has decided.
Hire people of color somewhere.
Somewhere. Someone would have told you this was bad. So basically what happened was Barnes & Noble decided to put out the updated versions of the classics with new covers. So the inside's the same.
Let's entice new readers.
Yeah. So we're going to entice a new reader to read Frankenstein by putting a picture of an African-American Frankenstein on the cover. We're going to entice new readers to read Alice in Wonderland by putting a Chinese Alice on the cover. Right? Like, they didn't change the actual stories. They just put people of color on the covers.
They used AI to process the books, and anywhere that they weren't explicitly... the character wasn't explicitly described as being white.
Is that how they did it?
Blackfaced them.
So basically any character whose skin tone wasn't described got turned into a person of color on the cover. Because they could, you know, authentically say, well, no one ever says what Frankenstein looks like. So they just say what kind of body parts he has. They don't actually say what his skin tone is.
We made this problematic, but there's no reason to assume that it wasn't already problematic.
But you can't do that with like books that are racist, like because they're written at a different time in like Mark Twain books, right? Who has characters saying racist things, but now he has characters saying racist things to their black friends who are just like, cool.
Right.
And I'm like, that doesn't work anymore.
Right.
You can't retcon characters.
No.
And that's what I think was offensive. Retconning is basically when you retroactively go back and you change what a story was in a sequel.
I saw they were folks on Twitter calling it literary blackface.
Mm-hmm.
And meanwhile, there are retellings of those classic stories.
All of them, pretty much.
Legitimately.
With people
done
of color.
Done by own voices, folks.
It's kind of like, listen, there are people who get mad that the new Little Mermaid isn't a white girl, right? And all I could think is, well, you have the original to watch. It's wonderful. It's great.
Also,
you're committed to it.
She's kind of a fish.
First of all, yes, she's a mermaid. Not to mention the fact that it's a silly argument because she's a fish that's supposed to be swimming around like the Netherlands, but she's got like a Jamaican crab hanging out with her. Okay.
But you know what? But making her a person of color is just too much.
Too far. Too far.
Those are all fine.
No, but that, right. So the fact is that like, instead of getting upset and saying, oh, how dare they? It's a cartoon. Watch the cartoon if you really like it, the version it is.
Correct.
Now that there's a new version, we're going to try it a different way and see how it changes the story.
Right. Which is different. You're making a new story. You're not just being like, well, she was always that way.
Yeah.
Just you couldn't tell.
Right. Yes, she was always that way. So going back and changing it would be, you'd have a whole different story.
Right.
Because a person of color would be not like... would react differently to the situations they were in, the same way that if you made Frankenstein Jewish, think about it that way, right? We're not what we call, people call the woke police, right?
Right, exactly.
We're just sitting and pointing at things that are so obviously stupid.
Right.
That they're just weird.
Which reminds me, so Dahlia Adler, who we have spoken to in a previous episode.
Yes, we've interviewed Dahlia Adler.
She has a book out called In His Hideous Heart, which is reimagined Edgar Allan Poe, which I'm fascinated by the idea. I'd love to read those because it's the dark and the twisty, but more contemporary for our time.
Yeah.
And I'm just curious what they did with it and how they, you know, expanded it to be more reachable to today's audience.
So a retelling. Okay.
Those are great.
We have the Joseph retelling right here that we just talked about with Dara Horn. And she starts off with a female character in modern times who runs a tech company that she's named the Geniza because it's a tech company that saves information.
Oh, cute.
Yeah. And so she calls it a Geniza and she's called to what country to help out? Egypt.
Oh, okay, fun.
Just like in the story of Joseph.
Oh, she went down to Egypt.
She goes down to Egypt and while she's in Egypt, something happens, but there's a lot, the moment that she's literally like in the bottom of a pit and I'm like, oh, and then her sister like comes back with help to get her after ditching her. I was like, okay, we're looking at a Joseph retelling. And, but we've got girls, we've got it modernized.
Yeah.
It's one thing to say, I'm going to go back and I'm going to write the actual story of Joseph.
Yeah.
But what I'm going to do is it's not a retelling. It's going to be the telling, but I'm going to change stuff because I just want to. That, I don't like that. Like, don't go back and retcon history. Yeah. Make it a retelling and set it in a different time. You can do whatever the hell you want with it.
They're so fun. I haven't read one yet that I didn't like. I have actually a set right now that I got from somebody who, I mean, we're drowning in books now, so that's just my life. And E.L. Tannenbaum, and I haven't read them yet, but they're fairy tale retellings. And the first one, I believe, that I have is Cinderella, and it turns out that Prince Charming is problematically abusive.
And I can see that.
Right?
Look how he behaves in Into the Woods.
I didn't recognize your face. That's why I need to use a shoe. You know.
Well then.
Or your voice or literally anything about you.
I know nothing about you because I haven't been paying attention.
I wasn't paying attention.
Yeah.
But you left a shoe. So here we go. So I haven't read it yet, but I'm really excited to read about those because there's a YouTube channel where they've done like Not So Happily Ever After. I can't remember the guy who does it, but they're so funny. Talks about like, so for example, Eric and Little Mermaid's annoyed that Ariel keeps using like, she's like, it's called a fork. You know that. We've covered this a million times. You know, and so it's kind of like that they're in marriage counseling and then, you know.
Oh, I've seen that. That's good.
Yeah, so funny.
I love retellings. And again, retellings all have elements of the speculative in them.
Yes.
Because you have to a little bit because they're retellings of fairy tales. Who does this great is we interviewed a while ago, the author of Dahlmaker of Krakow, Ramiro.
Yes.
And the books that I know she's working on right now and writing, I'm very much looking forward to because of her love of fairy tale retelling and including obscure folklore and fairy tales that may not have been heard before.
Yes.
Right? Like that's a good thing that we can start learning from and including. We talked about this in our episode about fairy tales.
Yes. And that's another thing. This whole like, you know, Barnes and Noble fiasco, it just, there were so many threads of people being like, read these instead. And I was like, yes, please.
Like,
I will.
Like your Alice retelling. The question is this. We are learning about all this because we're looking at book Twitter.
Yes.
And book Twitter is made up of genuinely well-meaning writers, agents, publishers, editors, bloggers, right, reviewers, sometimes teenagers and kids who are like reviewing, which is cool. That's who it's made up of. But then all of a sudden, everyone will like unite over one thing and everyone just gets angry. And I wonder
how much
of passionate. What we're seeing is actually being reflected off of book tour. Like, is Barnes and Noble going to make a change based on this?
You know what? It's funny because apparently that was just one location of Barnes & Noble, really. And so another location posted their tweet that instead of doing that, they made a table of new stories the way that
retellings that
people
are
had suggested is here. Let's highlight new classics.
Or new classics. They weren't all retellings.
Like,
they weren't all the Alice ones.
If you haven't read Octavia Butler yet, get in there because they're amazing.
I need to do that.
And like, her books, it's funny. So, you know, people talk about, oh, I don't like fantasy or I don't like this and I don't like that.
Mm-hmm.
But you know what? There are some books out there where the speculative element is, it's part of the story, but it's not the story. Right. Like you can have a sci-fi where J.D. Robb's books, there's a mystery. It takes place in the future. So there's spaceships and robots and aliens, but it's actually like a hard-boiled detective mystery. It just happens to take place in that setting. It's not, I don't want to say it's not crucial to the story, but it's like, that's the setting. Well, it's not the,
that's what it should be like though.
Yeah.
It should be about, I'm invested in these characters and in this plot, and not because there's this like cool speculative element.
I don't know. I like exploring a world.
Sure.
Like if the world is interesting, like Pern, you know, the Dragons of Pern, like that is an interesting story because it's the characters themselves are actually somewhat less important because it takes place over generations.
Mm-hmm.
It's really like this world exists in this way. And there has to be this balance between the dragons and this fireweed so that the humans can continue to survive. And like, how do humans make it better or worse as their understanding of this like mythology waxes and wanes, and they have to reacquaint themselves to like this need for dragons.
Well, then it just kind of serves their story though. It's no different than Outlander, where the time travel element is there to serve their decision making.
Yes.
Are they going to stay or are they going to go to safety in the future? Will you stay or will you go? Like having the option of leaving. That's what the time travel is about.
Right.
It's not about time travel.
Yes. And so I like that. So when people like take a whole brush and they say, I don't like speculative fiction of any kind, and you're like, well, I mean,
probably not true. Right.
Probably not true.
There are people, when I went to Highlights and the guy who picked me up was the driver, and I was like, we have an hour to drive together and he's really nice. Let's find out what we could talk about that we have in common. This is not a chauffeur. This is a guy who volunteered to pick me up at the airport.
Yeah.
Let's talk. So I said, what do you read? And he's like, you know, no one ever asks me.
Oh, wow.
I go, really? He goes, you know, I started getting into nonfiction, like murder mystery stuff. True crime.
Yeah.
Yeah. And I'm like, so we literally spent the whole time talking about, you know, the O.J. Simpson documentary and true crime books and what that he should read Eric Larson, because Eric Larson loves to do that stuff, right? Where he talks about like the Chicago World's Fair. And
not Eric Larson from the Far Side.
No. Is it Eric Larson? that's the name.
Hold on.
The guy who writes the book about the Chicago World's Fair. I don't think it's the guy from the Far Side, but now I'm like, are you looking him up?
I'm looking up the Far Side because.
No, I think they might have the same.
Gary Larson.
Eric Larson writes the book about the World's Fair, and he writes the book about the discovery of sending messages across the ocean. Oh, remember? Did I loan that to you?
No, but that sounds fab.
It's really good. And so he's writing another one.
This is a question my son periodically has. Like, how do cell phones work across oceans?
Oh, then he would really like this.
How does a combustion engine work? And I'm like, I am exhausted. I can't discuss
it. Well, so if he were to read a book where it was told kind of like a Jeffrey Archer book, two men discover the same thing, but one man gets a patent and the other one doesn't.
You know what?
That's how it's told.
I read one like that about the airplane, the race to the airplane, because there were people in France and there were a couple other folks at the same time the Wright brothers were coming out and experimenting with their plane. There were same ideas popping up in different places. So it's interesting because I've read speculative fiction about that where they take it and they make it a slightly more paranormal or alien influence, because it is like, and we talked about this when we talked about Deborah Harkness, is that it's interesting to take something that's in the real world that has maybe a very benign scientific explanation and to give it some kind of, but maybe it's not.
Maybe it's there's really
interesting.
Well, it was months ago. Somebody posted a picture of a bounce house that was blown up in the yard of their apartment complex for like 12 hours and no one was supervising it and there was no party coming. Now, my husband, who runs bounce house company, had said it's there because the people who work there are like, we're going to set it up early because it's our schedule. Like we have to get to other parties. We'll tell the parents it's there and then we'll just take off.
Yeah.
And then they'll come when they come. But the person didn't know that. So they were like, why is it sitting there? And then my favorite reply was, portals are getting weirder nowadays. And all you think was, that's a good start to a story.
Love it.
Portals are getting weirder and weirder and weirder.
Yes.
Is the best explanation for any random thing you'll find anywhere.
Yes.
Yeah.
Well, it's funny because, you know, I talked about this previously, is the Magic Bitter Magic Sweet is a story that like, there's like a B plot that talks about like, you know, there are a lot of fairy tales that have baked goods in it. Where'd those come from? Who bakes those things? And that's a B plot in this. And I was like, but where do they come?
But where you just do they don't
think
from? About it.
Like every book has like some magic, I'm sorry. They don't get it from Costco.
Yeah.
It's not like magic cookies, Alice. Like that's not where they come from.
Well, I have in my book a a demon lady who has a pastry shop.
Nice.
So they're like, oh, what did you put in your blackberry tarts that made me so passionate? And she's like, just love. And they're like, magic love. And she's like, no, I mean, when I'm baking them, I really love doing it.
Oh, wink, wink.
Wink, wink.
I can't remember the book I read, but there was one like super cute romance novel I read called something about misfortune. It was basically like this woman, she was like burnt out on love. And so she invented this super famous cookie, which is a fortune cookie dipped in bitter chocolate. And so the idea is like, you know, whatever. And then like her breakthrough is that when she discovers love herself is at the end of the book, spoilers. You know, she makes one that's like part bitter, part sweet, to kind of represent that, like, the world's not all bitter and it's not
yin
all
and yang.
Yeah, there's like a balance or whatever. It was cute.
Yeah.
You know, and you get like, there's little things like that. And so who can't say that she's sweetened and so her baking sweetened also?
Yeah, that's true. When I cook begrudgingly, the food obviously does not come out as good as when I cook with excitement because I just don't care. Like, although sometimes they can't tell. Like tonight I was like, ugh, fine. And I just chopped up a bunch of chicken breasts and like threw on some, you know, stir fry sauce. And all of a sudden my kids appeared. This is my favorite. And I'm like, honestly, this is the laziest thing I could possibly make. Yeah. I had rice in the fridge already that was sticky rice. And I'm like, I'll just reheat it. And the kids are like, you made sticky rice. I'm like, yes. Like I just made the laziest meal and they loved it. So some things are foolproof, but when it comes to baking, particularly,
yes.
I think baking is the kind of thing that you have to do with intention because you can't just absentmindedly make certain things.
Oh, you can, but there's consequences like that. Well, so this was actually a good consequence. So there were years and years ago, I was making this chocolate cake. That's one of my favorite recipes, chocolate cake recipes. And, you know, I'm very good at math and I can do fractions, but this time I was chatting on the phone to my mom and I ended up accidentally quadrupling the amount of cocoa powder in the recipe.
Whoops.
Because I was doubling the recipe, but I quadrupled the chocolate instead. And so it was super, super dark, like super chocolatey, but like not sugary, right? Because I doubled the chocolate and no other ingredients. And that's how I started making it from then on because it was a hit. People liked it that way. And so I was like, okay, well, quadruple the chocolate it is.
I love it. Sometimes you come up with something by accident, right? Like you don't have any pie crust, so you just make your shepherd's pie without a crust.
Yeah.
And everyone's like, this is delicious mashed potatoes on top of meat. And I'm like, yeah, it's not shepherd's pie. And then my son Izzy chimes in, it's Moshe pie because he's a shepherd, but it's a little different because there's no crust. And I'm like, yes. So now when I make it crustless, which is deliberate, because it was such a hit and it was so easy. Thank you to my sister Melinda for the suggestion of making crustless shepherd's pie if I didn't have it.
I've done mashed potatoes on the bottom of a quiche because I also did not have a crust and I didn't want to deal with it.
Mashed potatoes make a great substitute for just about anything.
Literally. I mean, like, I just eat them directly. Also.
Oh, yeah. Just a nice creamy mashed potato. We always end up talking about food somehow. Speculative food is also good.
You know, I'm not even hungry because I made for dinner, I made Instant Pot spaghetti. And it was one of those things where,
I saw the picture.
You put it all in the crock pot and you push the button and then you leave it alone. And so then I served it to my kids. And I was like, so what do you think? They're like, what? And I'm like, well, do you like this recipe? Like, this is how you always make it. And I'm like, no, it's not. They're like, yeah, it is. I'm like, okay, wait. Are you arguing with me about how I made this? Because I guarantee you.
But did it taste the same as the way you make it when it takes longer without the Instant Pot?
So my backhanded compliment for my teen is, it's good, but it doesn't have as much flavor as it usually has.
Because you didn't fry anything.
I did. I sauteed the meat first.
Oh. Then I don't know what she's talking about.
I don't know what she's talking about either. I put a bunch of seasoning in, but I don't know.
Children are a bracha.
They're a bracha. They're a bracha.
They're a blessing.
But you know what? If I can do it in 15 minutes and get the same results as when I take longer, then I'm definitely going with the easier one.
We should just make this a food podcast.
We're done. That's it. It's over. You know.
Where we talk about the fact that literally parenting is just making sure that they eat dinner every night until they leave your house.
So I will say that I read a lot of baking related mystery novels, which is a genre. Let's be clear.
Wait, didn't I tell you that? Okay, so Rebecca Potos, you're getting a shout out, Becca, who is a literary agent that I think is awesome. And she put up a what's called hashtag MSWL. I spoke about this before. It means manuscript wish list. It's when an agent is looking for something specific to be submitted. And she said, enough with the books with the pastry shops. Give me your book with the poisoned pastry shop. And then literally one day later, she's like, I asked and it was fulfilled and now I want this. I'm like, wait, so you asked for poisoned pastry shop and you got an inbox full of people submitting books about poisoned pastry. But that, here's what that means. That means that they were completed manuscripts.
Correct.
They didn't just see her tweet and go, I'm writing it overnight, 75,000 words. No. They saw her tweet and went, I have one. I have been waiting for this
just
day.
Just waiting for this day.
For the day that a book with a poisoned pastry shop would be asked for. Here I am, Becca. And that's what they said.
That's amazing.
So now we're hopefully going to see a spate of
poison
pastry shops.
But it's funny because they always have recipes in them and I never, ever follow the recipes, ever. I never do any of the recipes in these books.
Well, didn't I tell you what happened at the Spartan baking thing? I tweeted the whole thing because it was amazing. It was hilarious. I went to one of the local Sephardic synagogues I signed up for the Bereka making class. This is not like it's really Berekas with the pastry.
Yeah.
This is like with the dough.
Right.
We call it doughy dough.
Yeah.
Where it feels doughy. And okay, so they put out, we didn't make the filling because the filling has to be refrigerated overnight. But they showed us the recipe. So they printed out the recipe. And the woman from the Sephardic Sisterhood stands up over the mic to tell us all about the recipe. And every ingredient got changed. Every step got changed. Every measurement got changed.
So classic.
Everyone got a pen because she knew it was going to happen. It was amazing.
Classic.
Wait, the best.
Here's this recipe. I did all of these things differently. It was amazing.
It was amazing. and then the best was because it was run by multiple members of the sisterhood and even one or two men who were there who were helping. As we were rolling out our berekas and shaping them and filling them, people were walking by and helping. And everyone who walked by gave me opposite advice.
Oh, that's amazing.
It was so good. Jewish. It was so good.
So Jewish.
She opened it by saying 5 cooks, 6 recipes.
Yes.
And then she was right.
Yes.
It was so good so that good. I'm like, how do I include this in future work? Like, I literally started taking notes of the experience.
Can you imagine? Okay, so you have Macbeth's witches laboring over a potion, right?
Yeah.
But what if they were Jewish and they are arguing
double,
over
double.
How to do it?
No, it's triple.
It's triple. You always skimp on the ingredients. No, you're supposed to stir it double. No, that describes the fire.
There's no trouble. It's a joy. It's not toil.
It would be amazing. Like you could
if
never,
you put trouble in it, it won't work.
Every time one of them turns, the other one throws something in.
Cauldron gurn and cauldron bubble. It's not bubble. Don't wait for it to bubble. It's too late if you let it bubble.
It'll burn. You gotta stir the bottom.
Oh my god, it speaks too. We are so much. This is the funniest thing ever.
Because I've actually heard that it's not actually the potion that's the magic. The magic is part of the incantation and the whatever you're like aligning forces and stuff. So.
But hold on. You read Hecate, right? Like the song Hecate.
Yeah,
So later on, there's a theory that Shakespeare outsourced one of the chapters because he's like, I need this to be more exciting. So somebody at the theater troupe was like, let's have a song be here. And he's like, well, I don't write songs. And they're like, well, I do. That's the theory. Because 2/3 of the way in, all of a sudden there's this witches sing a song. To get Hecate, who's their like queen witch, to show up. And then they sing this song about Hecate and she sings it. It's this like weird, what is happening? Why are they singing a song about being witches? And it's super weird. And I had my students rewrite it as different moderns. Like,
oh my God, that would be amazing.
Write a song for the scene.
That's so good.
Sometimes I just like to torture them.
I like that. That is a great idea. Actually, now I'm picturing, oh gosh, what's the movie with Bette Midler where they're witches?
Yes, Hocus Pocus. Hocus Pocus. Julie's favorite.
That's what I'm imagining. Those three witches. No, it's, you don't just use the eyes. It's a waste. Use the whole newt.
Use the whole newt. Bette Midler saying use the whole newt. Sarah Jessica Parker going, I'm only supposed to use half a newt.
I don't want to touch the eyes here.
You do it.
Oh no, you're holding by the tail. It all fell in.
Oh my God. This is actually the perfect transition. After a little musical and commercial break, we're going to talk about just some random stuff. But it definitely.
Book stuff.
But I'm going to tie it with Shakespeare and you'll see. Okay, here's your little musical moment. So now, one drink in.
Woohoo!
We're going to do two things. First, we're going to talk about Shakespeare book paraphernalia, because that's the thing that got me transitioning from like talking about Macbeth. And I was like, oh my God, we were going to talk about this thing.
Yes, we actually forgot. Had decided we were talking about this. And we somehow accidentally backed our way into this conversation, which is perfect.
That's true. And then we just kind of forgot we were doing it. Hello, teenage son. Bye, teenage son. He waved. You know, the microphone cannot hear you wave.
No, they cannot. But they can see your pile of books.
That's true. And, well, I think that's, I don't know. He could read that if he wants. Drunk mommies are great. okay, so we decided we're going to talk about book paraphernalia and book swag. And right. It made me think of it because I have a big poster of Midsummer Night's Dream on my wall. And there are people who come into my house and are like, cool, is that the whole play? And then one guy was like, what is this? What's Midsummer? Like someone who had actually never heard of Shakespeare before, which was unique.
That's special.
It was a special, yeah.
You get to be the person who's like, well, buckle up.
It's only happened one time.
Okay.
But most people, even my kids, are like, which part did you play, mommy? You know, like that kind of stuff.
Nice.
And that made me think about book swag. And then my friend Julie gave me a Wicked Witch for my birthday. And the Wicked Witch, because she and I have different feelings about it, but we both love her.
Yeah.
She thinks the Wicked Witch is awesome just because she's wicked and evil.
Own it.
Yes. And I think she's awesome because of the show Wicked, where she's not wicked and evil. She's, you know, powerful and brave.
Right.
And that's two different people.
And that's okay.
Yeah. And they're both good.
It makes it fun to discuss because if everyone saw it the same way, then there would be nothing to talk about.
So it was the perfect book swag.
Yes.
Yeah.
So I collect. So every year I am part of a gift exchange, Mystery Maccabee or...
Me too!
There was a Purim one year, I think. So, and I always put down like what kinds of things I like. So, you know, obviously there's, you know, the Harry Potter folks and then I buy gifts for my person. This year I got, I bought my person an Outlander sewing pattern.
Cool!
To get so she could, because she was a sewer and she liked Outlander. I was like, she
which pattern did you give her, like, to be...
To make a dress, a gown like
oh my God,
the characters awesome. Wear, right?
Yeah, perfect for Purim.
Right?
Yeah.
So I thought that was fun. And so I've been collecting dragon items. I have multiple dragon mugs and charms and, you know,
are some of them like book-oriented swag, like specific to a series?
So I like dragon books. So if there's a book on the cover or the series is about a dragon, I will read it probably.
Oh, wait, I haven't let you Sophia pass your next book yet, have I?
No, I'm gonna get there. It's gonna get there.
Okay,
I'm gonna
get there. Yeah, I lent it to a 12-year-old.
So I love dragons.
First. Sorry, you'll get it next. Okay.
So I love dragons, so I dragon related stuff. Do I have like actual like this is from a book? I don't know. Like I don't really have shirts that are book related.
Well, there's two kinds of swag. There's the swag that comes with getting an early purchase of a book, a pre-order.
Yes. Oh, so that I have because I am in the Raincoats. So I have an early edition of Rachel Lynn Solomon. So
wait,
I have,
which one?
So
X Talk?
No, not yet. No, my God.
Today,
I can't
tonight,
wait,
tomorrow?
Yes, that one. I was like, oh no, the X Talk I'm excited about.
The one that takes place on the last day of school.
Yes, the last day of school.
Yeah.
So it's my favorite trope of enemy rivals to lovers.
Mm-hmm.
And so I have a sticker and I've got a bookmark and I'm excited about that. So that's fun.
It makes you want to be on everyone's book street team for all your favorite 100%, authors.
100%. You know, like I can rave about your book and I get swag. Yes. Sign me up.
Yes,
for that.
Please. Yes. I know when people are like, can we send you a book? And I'm like, yes. Wait, am I supposed to read the blurb before I say yes? Okay, fine. I'll read the book. Yes.
So I know Harry Potter folks are, I like the books and I love, you know.
The Harry Potter swag is a thing.
But I don't do Harry Potter swag because, you know, like, I don't know. It's just not a thing that I'm
passionate
about.
I feel like it's a little
bit
more of an expensive swag.
It can be.
Because a lot of it is sold by Disney, right?
Mm.
Right? It's Disney, not Universal.
Yeah.
A lot of it is, you know.
And like even Target and Kohl's, a few places.
But yes, but it's also super accessible because it's everywhere. So like Outlander swag, you have to go online. I have a great Take Me Home to Lollybrock mug that I love. It's my favorite coffee mug. And I have a lot of coffee mugs. So yeah, that's Outlander swag.
You know what? I have Doctor Who swag. So I'm a bit of an insufferable snob. I just realized that I really prefer swag that is more subtle so that, you know, it's a wink at other people who are fans and not an outright, like, I love this thing. You know, it's like a subtle. So it's actually the Doctor Who mug I have, which is from a previous gift exchanges, a Van Gogh painting with the TARDIS in it. But it's very subtle.
I've seen that one. That's a good one.
It's very subtle. So
I like the subtlety stuff.
Yeah.
So I have my West Wing mug that has just like their names on it, like the names of the characters.
Exactly.
Right.
I think it makes me a bit of a snob. I'm sorry to say that. I just like it to be.
You don't want one that's just like, oh, I love the West Wing. You're
no,
right? Like,
Sully. I want it to only another fan would be able to recognize it. I want it to be a secret handshake.
A secret handshake with other fans of the work and the books. Right. So what other swag? I mean, okay. So most of the swag that you get, like, when you're at a bookstore, it would be the bookmarks that they come in advance, or a sticker, or a pin. Pins are very popular.
Bags.
Totes are popular.
All kinds of stuff, man. Socks.
Yes. Socks. T-shirts are a thing. Sweatshirts.
Yeah. Yep.
So I'm like super, I'll take it. Mm. But here's the thing. I'm not out there buying it.
Right. I want it as a gift.
Yeah. I also think it doesn't motivate me to pre-order a book.
Ah, I see what you're saying.
If you see a book, what swag would have to come with a book for you to pre-order it at full price instead of waiting for paperback? Because I'm a wait for paperback girl. I have so many books in my to-be-read pile that when someone says, like, this book is in hardback, but it'll probably be in paperback next year, I'm like, okay, fine, I'll wait. What do I care?
Yeah, you know what?
I'll wait.
I never plan ahead for books. So I'll put them on my list. And then if I see them, I'll get them. Or if I'm at a bookstore and I see a book I want, I'll just get it. But I don't. I
walk away from bookstores if it's only in hardback, because I know that, like, I'm going to read it anyway. So, and that it doesn't matter when.
Right. Like, apparently Kathy Reichs has a new book out. Now, Kathy Reichs writes the Temperance Brennan series that mm-hmm. Bones is based on. So she has a new book coming out. I just found out from my friend BJ. and I am going to read it. There's no question I'm going to read it. But I've been reading these books for like 10 years.
Right. So you can wait.
So, right. I'm like, I'm not.
It's my feel. You know. when like, we saw that book club of teenagers at their place books so reading cute. The Hazelwood by Melissa Albert.
Yeah.
And I love that book. Yeah. And I was like, you guys, you're reading book one. Wait, is this, have any of you read the sequel? And they were like, no, have you? I'm like, no, I'm waiting for paperback. Like, I want to support authors, but yes. I also want to support my bank account.
Yeah. So it's funny because we went to Powell's bookstore in Portland, which is a magical, magical place. And my teens went crazy. And when I say crazy, they picked out like a couple $100 worth of books. My daughter was like, have you heard of the book To All the Boys I've Loved Before?
Yeah.
Oh, sorry, the movie.
Yeah. So it's a book.
We've seen. Exactly. So it's a book.
Good for that author.
It's a trilogy.
I did not know that.
So my daughter wanted a box set. And I was like, so let me just tell you, I was planning on getting you guys like $15 of the books each. Not
this. Well, I always give my kids a price limit.
Yeah. Huh?
And then now my kids have gotten to the point where I feel terrible. Like, oh, I'm such a capitalist, because my kids are like, hold on, mom, let me check Amazon. If it's cheaper there, can I just order it? And I'm like, well, yeah. Like, I want to support my local bookstore also, but at the same time,
if it's
$6 on Amazon and $20 in the bookstore, I'm going to spend the $6 on Amazon for getting Prime.
That's why I like used bookstores, but I also, I have like a 15% rule. Like, if it's within 15%, then I'll definitely stay local. And to be honest, when I go, when I go to a bookstore,
I'm with you on that.
Walking out with one book is fine.
Right.
All the other ones I need to skimp. So the one book I'm going to walk out with, like, I'm going to pay full price, or I'll do whatever.
Yes. And
like,
if it's a $16 book in the store and $13 book on Amazon, I'll just get it in the store.
Yeah, exactly.
Right. It's too close where I'm like, you know, it's fine.
To read it right now. Exactly. Yes. Exactly. Like, I do love my local bookstore. I actually have one here that I got used.
Wait, don't read the blurb. We're going to guess what they are.
I've already read the blurb.
No.
I bought it.
Okay, the second thing that Yumi and I discussed beforehand was that she had brought us like a book she hasn't read yet.
Yes, I have not read the books at all.
Literally, I opened my front door to my house and there's a bag of books sitting there, but no Yumi. And I was like, the book fairy has been here.
Right, because we knew we were going to meet tonight, but we hadn't decided what we were talking about. And so when we decide what to talk about, I go through my bookshelf and I glean a whole bunch of books. And this
you
time I was
grabbed
like,
every book you haven't read.
No, that's not true. What I did was I just got in my car without any books and I looked over and there was a bag of books in my car.
What?
As usual.
Oh my God.
And I was like, all right, well, I'll just bring this bag of books.
I'll just bring these. She walked in and I'm like, let's pretend that we're just like in a bookstore.
Yeah.
And we're judging a book by its cover.
Oh my God.
And we're like, would I buy this?
Okay.
So for me, if I picked up The Kiss Quotient, which I think I would because I like the way the binding looks.
Can you guess why I picked it up?
The Kiss Quotient, a novel by Helen Hong, because it's a rare and riveting love story. I cannot guess why you picked it up except, oh, I see. There's math on the cover.
That's math.
The cover has them kissing and there's math.
Kissing and math.
Kissing cartoon characters, and she's wearing glasses and a bun.
She's a nerdy kissing math person.
Yes.
What's not to like?
It's a rom-com about a mathematician.
Yes. But it's more. If you read the blurb, it's so good.
Stella Lane comes up with algorithms to predict customer purchases. This is the KISS quotient. Okay. A job that has given her more money than she knows what to do with and way less experience in the dating department than the average 30-year-old. 30! Awesome. It doesn't help that Stella has Asperger's or that French kissing reminds her of a shark getting its teeth cleaned by pilot fish.
She's not wrong.
Oh, her conclusion, she needs lots of practice with a professional, which is why she hires an escort, Michael Fun, with the looks of a K-drama. Oh, that's also why you picked it up, because it's K-drama.
I love K-dramas.
K-drama star and the martial arts moves to match.
Also, fake relationships to real relationships. That's another trope I love.
The Vietnamese-Swedish stunner can't afford to turn down Stella's offer. And when she comes up with a lesson plan, he proves willing to help her check off all the boxes from foreplay to more than missionary position.
Can check my boxes.
First of all, I have a friend, and I'm just going to call her friend even though we've never met because we're friends on Twitter, and I think that counts now.
That seems fair.
Who I'm been getting to, I feel like I'm getting an insider look at her book because I'm getting to read it one chapter at a time like a serial.
Ooh, fun.
While she writes it. And it's so good because it's also got a fake relationship in it.
I love fake relationships.
And then it's got a real relationship in it that they have to hide because the fake relationship has to be the one that everyone thinks is real.
Yes.
So now you've got the fake couple and the real couple, and the common denominator between them and the real couple have to hide their love, and the fake couple, it's like everyone has to think it's real. And I'm like, that's amazing. And it's new adults. So it's like 20 something, 19 to 25 year olds, right? Which is a genre that people keep calling adult. People, the behavior is so young adult that it's called like new adult right? And I feel like this genre of there's, you know, fake dating to real dating, it's done a lot, but fake dating and then one of them is just horrible but you're stuck there is even like, I love that even more.
So that was one of the K-dramas I watched called My Lovely Samsoon. They had like a fake relationship, but then it was tension and it has to stay fake and then we have to have rules to keep fake. And oh my God, it was so good and I love it.
Oh my gosh. Well, I love this stuff. I hope she gets this book published.
That sounds
because
great.
And I'll have, but what's great is I'm gonna get eventually to read it when it's out in stores and be like, this is totally different because it'll have been revised. Okay, let's do the next one.
Okay.
The next one is called There Is No Dog, and the cover is a cloud shaped like a dog. So and it the only quote on the cover is just that it's genius.
What? New York Times bestselling author Anthony Horowitz. But that's all he said is genius.
Genius.
Which, like, you know, I'm sure he had more to say, but that's what they went with.
There Is No Dog by Meg Rossoff. Is it like about a psychiatrist?
No.
A psychologist? No. A social worker?
I don't think so.
Fine, I'll read that blurb.
There, yeah.
In the beginning, Bob created the heavens and the earth and the beasts of the field and the creatures of the sea and 25 million other species, including lots of gorgeous girls. But mostly, he prefers eating junk food and leaving his dirty clothes in a heap at the side of the bed. Every time he falls in love, earth erupts in natural disasters. So humankind is going to be very sorry indeed he ever ran into a beautiful, completely irresistible girl called Lucy. Okay, so here's the deal with this book. I would have looked at it because I like the title.
Yes.
But I would have had to do what I'm doing right now. This is signed, by the way.
Yes.
I would have had to do what I'm doing right now, which is read the blurb and go, I'm still not sure.
Yep.
And then go to the first page and read the opening lines to decide.
You want me to?
Yeah. So this is what I would have had to do.
Oh, glorious, most glorious, glorious, and yet again, glorious.
I mean, it's a good line. But I'm still not pulled in.
The sun spreads warm and golden on Lucy's face and arms. Pale new leaves unfurl so fast she can almost hear the little sighs they make as they open. Birds tweet and Twitter their social networks like city workers seeking potential mates.
Okay, that's clever. All right, maybe I would.
A few tipsy clouds punctuate the sweet blue sky. The world reels drunk with happiness.
Okay, so here's what I conclude.
Mm-hmm.
If I needed a fun book to take with me because I was going somewhere serious and I don't need emotions right now because I made that mistake before.
Oh.
Yeah. Had my kid at a hospital for 3 days and I brought along Turtles All the Way Down.
Oh.
By John Green.
Yeah.
And it was a huge mistake.
No. When you're already near tears, more tears is not a good idea.
This I would have brought.
That's fair.
I would have read the first line and gone, yeah, all right. I'll do.
Is it Bruce Almighty a little bit?
Yes. Maybe a little. It's a little Bruce Almighty, but YA.
Yeah.
I'll take it to the hospital with me. It's a fun read. I won't be too upset.
Okay, so then you need to read the first. I have read some of this one, so I cheated a little bit. You need to read.
Okay, so this cover I would not have grabbed for because this is not normally my kind of cover. The fact that I've read Throne of Glass is because people told me to, and it has a very similar style cover of like where you see the sketch of the character.
Yeah, so there's a person, there's a girl in flight. She's jumping actively with her hair flying. She's dirty, and she's holding a blood-covered hockey stick with wrapping on the handle. But this is what got
called
me.
Broken Lands so this by...
is Jonathan Mayberry. So this is why I read this book, because the first chapter is Gabriela Gutsy Gomez buried her mother on Wednesday and again on Friday.
Okay, that's good.
This was the world, and that's how it was.
All right. If I had only read the first lines, because so this cover wouldn't have made me read the first lines. But if you had said to me, just open it up, I would have taken the book.
So Gutsy spends her days flying under the radar. But when her mother's undead body is returned to her doorstep from the grave, she realizes that life will find you no matter how hard you try to hide from it. Meanwhile, Benny Amora sets out on a journey to finish what Captain Joe Ledger first started, find a cure. But as he ventures into new and unexplored territory, he soon learns that the terror he faced in the rotten ruin is nothing compared to the Broken Lands. So here's where I made a crucial error
of
grabbing this book.
Okay.
It is not the first in the series.
No!
And it says book one of Broken Lands.
Yes, it does. On the side, which we're usually pretty happy when it does that.
So
it's a liar. The book is a liar.
It's a liar. So it's starting a new series following new characters, but it builds on the world from Rotten Ruin, which is a different book. And I'm like, I feel robbed. Because then he mentions, I mean, again, I only read like very little of it, but then there's characters and there's like a wink, wink from like it was a previous book. And I'm like, darn it. I am a completionist. I don't like starting mid flow. And I got bamboozled.
You got bamboozled. Well, why don't you grab the next one? Make you feel better.
Okay.
Let's see. Wait, have you read this one before?
I have not read it.
Okay. It is called Fortunes Rising. The cover has the coloring of the Douglas Adams series Hitchhiker's Guide.
Yes.
It looks like it's a sequel to Hitchhiker's Guide.
It's very sci-fi. Sarah King wrote it. It's Outer Bounds 1. They do say it's the first book.
They say it's book one, which you and I always appreciate.
We do appreciate
it's a female author, so it's not going to be full like Douglas Adams. But would I pick it up based on the fact that it reminds me of a series I love? Yes.
Exactly.
The coloring...
It's going to promise
very
you...
Very deliberate.
Yes, it's promising you sci-fi and adventure.
Silly sci-fi.
I don't know, actually.
That to me, I would have to grab the blurb to find out because I would go, Fortune's Rising, silly sci-fi, there's going to be some fun here.
So when a small band of rebels confront tyranny's terror, which will fortune favor? Under the super tech coalition
Hold
government.
Hold on, pause. We've already got alliteration in the blurb.
Yeah, 100%.
Can we not pretend this is not silly sci-fi?
It doesn't sound so silly. Fortune's colonists are enslaved to harvest the highly valuable brain-enhancing drug Yolk. Often losing their sanity and lives in the process. The population is dying off and the planet is becoming a police state whose only purpose is to harvest Yolk. But a revolution is in the air, fueled by an unlikely band of rebels, and then they list the rebels.
Wait. They list the rebels.
With PowerPoint.
Anna, a brilliant sociopathic child, and her quiet, lethally gifted sister, Magalie. Runaway Joel. Okay, this is going to be fun.
Right?
Runaway Joel, a virtuous military pilot turned tormented smuggler. Mylar, a tattooed chess-playing fugitive. Doberman, a simple robot in the throes of a startling transformation.
Yay!
The word throes with a robot is always funny. And Tatiana Iyer, a captured coalition soldier torn between loyalty and love. Okay, so now I'm like convinced.
It sounds fun, right?
This is going to be exactly what the colors of the cover promise me, that there's going to be some alliteration and some silly sentences, and that it's going to be, it's going to deliver
a romp. It'll be a space romp.
A romp. Thank you. Not so a space not opera, silly. A space romp.
Yes. It's not going to be silly because obviously there's death and like addiction and stuff, but it's going to be a bit of a romp with a ragtag bunch of revolutionaries.
Mm-hmm.
So this is how I pick books. I'm like, oh, the cover's pretty. And then I read it and I'm like, oh.
But you have to really think about the marketing of this. Somebody knew what they were doing when they picked these colors. They went, hey, which green? Can we get that Douglas Adams green? For the Sarah King series, mm-hmm. Fortunes Rising, mm-hmm. Outer Bounds 1. Can we get that Douglas? Yeah. So for example, the next one that you're grabbing. Clearly to me, this reads lower YA or upper middle grade.
Yeah. So this is thank you to my children for leaving stuff in my car and in my Shabbos bag. They just shoved
it
in.
Yes, and they have a napkin as a...
Yeah, which
somebody
is better.
Has a fun, so what's it called? Let's start with that.
My children are heathens and use
And they took it from the school library.
From their school library. It's called The School for Good and Evil, A World Without Princes. So includes deleted scenes and a chat with Soman Chainani. And I'm so sorry if I butchered that, but this book. So what I like is
I don't know how to pronounce their last name.
The cover is a bit anime styled.
Mm-hmm.
And I enjoy that because it I do enjoy anime, mm-hmm. and I like it promises a good story with good characters, so I like that it's a bit anime style.
But I also feel like looking at it, that, okay, the cover, the characters on the cover look like they're in either upper middle grades or in high school,
yes.
but they're dressed in clothing that makes me think that maybe they're royal, or maybe, and then it's called The World Without Princes. So now I'm thinking that we're going to have a school with fairy tale characters in it, which obviously
my kids
appeals
love
to kids.
Those.
So in the epic sequel to the New York Times bestselling novel, The School for Good and Evil, Sophie and Agatha are home, living out their ever after. But life isn't quite the fairy tale they expected.
Yeah.
When Agatha secretly wishes she'd chosen a different happy ending, she reopens the gates of the school for good and evil. But the world she and Sophie once knew has changed. Witches and princesses, warlocks and princes are no longer enemies. New bonds are forming. Old bonds are shattered. But underneath this uneasy arrangement, a war is brewing and a dangerous enemy rises. As Agatha and Sophie battle to restore peace, an unexpected threat could destroy everything and everyone they love. And this time, it comes from within. See, that's the sentence in the blurb we call the stakes.
Uh-huh.
Right? The stakes are this thing is happening and
medium
this
rare.
Horrible thing might also happen. The implication being, unless they save everybody.
They save the world.
That's the hardest thing about helping people with their query. Some people are not writing books with stakes. They're writing books that are called what we would call a quiet book. A book where the stakes aren't, they don't feel to the writer powerful enough to include in a sentence. If she doesn't reconcile the accident she was in with, you know, her emotional state, then she'll suffer forever. Right.
Okay.
Like that doesn't feel like the same stakes as if they don't close the portal, then the devil will get out. You know
right.
what I mean?
That's
like,
right. That's right.
And so it's harder to write those.
I hear that. That's interesting. So it's funny because since I'm writing a romance novel, what are the stakes in a romance novel is missing out on romance.
Missing out. Right. So then you would have to, it would be funny stakes, right? Like that's when you see their funny things.
Yeah.
The funny, cute, punny
right.
lines, right? About like, if
can they put aside their differences
and
embrace true love?
Embrace true love. Or will she be writing lines of code that lead nowhere forever?
And,
you know,
embrace true love, Shomernigia style.
Shomernigia style, right? Like without ever touching. Well, that's stakes. Can they decide to love each other without ever having touched?
Ooh.
That's actually really, are they going to be Shomernigia, which means, you know.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
No touching.
Yeah. It's going to get hot.
That's the name of the book. No touching. Which reminds me, matzo ball surprise.
Oh my gosh.
We have already gotten DM'd about that on Instagram saying, where can I buy it? And I went, I looked up the date for people. Like, so they can, it's coming soon. Before Pesach,
okay.
I believe.
If you had told me a year ago that there would be a book of any sort that said matzah in the title that wasn't a Pesach cookbook.
Yes.
I would not have believed you.
And
would
it's a rom-com.
Believed you.
With a fake date.
Deep in my heart, cannot believe that this is our future. It is amazing.
I saw this and I went, matzo ball surprise. It was Laura Brown, right? And I tagged Yoni immediately. I was like, Yoni, this is a gift.
Oh my God.
It is a rom-com where she has a fake guy. A guy can pretend to be her boyfriend, come home with her, right? For
it's
the Seder.
The best.
Yeah.
The best.
I don't want to know how it ends. Like, I want to just read it.
Oh,
matzo
so
ball surprise. I want to buy it before Pesach and take it with me.
Oh, that would be amazing. Okay. I also, just as a side note, I also want to buy a big body pillow shaped like a baguette.
Is that a thing?
So, yes.
For Pesach, I don't think you're allowed to use a baguette shaped body pillow on the holiday without bread.
Yeah, but it would be funny.
It would be hilarious.
So, I'm going to have my matzo ball surprise novel and my giant baguette.
Matzo balls
and
are fine. Unless you're gabrachs and a burrito blanket.
And I'm going to bring it with me.
Are they gabrachs?
Right. They're not. And so it's going to be amazing.
Oh my God.
She's going to hate me and never invite me back, but it's going to be so good.
Because you walk in with like a sweater that's like, I love toast.
Oh, slippers that are shaped like a loaf of bread. I've seen those too.
Yes.
Trust me,
oh my God.
I've been doing my research. Matzo ball.
Wait, and the donut neck thing shaped like a donut.
Yes. Okay. I'm going to go all out. It's going to be amazing.
All your chametz goodies and swag.
So I want the matzo ball surprise alone, or should I also bring like the donut mysteries? I feel like I could just get 11.
Bring a whole stack of books about pastry. plus Matzo Ball Surprise.
Oh, it's going to be so good.
And I'm so excited. I'm very excited to eventually read Matzo Ball Surprise. And I'm also excited because we, you know, just got that one book, In the Mail River by Shira Nyman,
yes,
where she gets to like meet her mother and grandmother and great grandmother at the same age she is now, 14.
Yes.
That's the dream to That's get to amazing. Meet the mom and the grandma that you love and find out what they were like at your exact age. That's cool.
I don't know if my mom and I would have gotten along if we were both 14.
I think I would have thought my mom was pretty badass at 14.
Yeah. My mom was very much of a rebel, and I am very much a rule follower. So I think I would have been annoyed.
I think I would have used her rebellion as an excuse to be a rebel. Ooh. Well, you are a rebel. And she would have been like, I didn't do anything dangerous. I just rebelled other ways. You know, like, I don't know.
Yeah, yeah,
but
yeah,
I think it would have been really fun to see the people that
yeah.
are old. It's like the Back to the Future thing.
Ooh.
Getting to
don't
see
fall
your
in
parents.
Love with your mom, though, just saying.
That's a whole, that's a retelling right there.
That's right.
A really weird one. Let's not do that.
No, don't do that.
Yeah.
You know, I read, oh gosh, one of the best time travel books I've read in a long time was, I kick myself now. I just want to remember the name of this book. So the interesting part of this book is that the guy cannot control his time travel. So it starts with him. He really just has this latent ability to like pick up an item and tell you its provenance.
Mm.
And then he has
back to speculative. It's all coming around 100%. In a circle, Yoni.
So he also, anytime he spends any amount of time with someone, he has a dream where he can see a snapshot into their life.
Mm-hmm.
Like, I will see how you are when you're having a big fight with your family, or I'll flash back to the time that, you know, my uncle was fired from a job or something. And I'm seeing like this very intimate snapshot into your life. And so he's plagued by this. And then the best part is that then it goes into the whole, like, can you learn how to control it? And how do you do that? And like, what would you be like if you could time travel? And like, what would you do? And so he knows exactly what he wants to do with his time travel. Once he has a goal in mind, like, what is he going to do? There was a crucial point in his history. He wants to go back and fix it.
What would you do?
Right. So it's interesting. I don't know what I would do.
I don't
want to mess up stuff.
I don't want to mess what I'm having now.
Yeah.
Right. Like, you don't want to accidentally wind yourself up in a worse situation
yeah.
or in a bad situation because you didn't learn the lessons that you learned and the mistakes that you made.
Right.
Right. Like, think about that. Like, you made a mistake once and I want to fix that mistake. I don't know. Not try to high five the guy from the head and the heart because he was so tall. I couldn't see him. Because that was super awkward and weird.
It
was. Malika, our new friend, just kind of stood there like, what are we going to do? And I'm like, high five again. Let's try it. And he didn't see me again. And I'm like, I am so short that someone who's 6'6" couldn't see my hand, or he was ignoring
me. I think about that concert every time I hear them on the radio.
Yeah. It was so amazing. But then I also think of my high five.
But if you went back in time.
Would I change the high five? Would I not bother trying?
But would you remember that time as strongly if you didn't have that?
Yes.
Little bit.
It's fabulous. It's a fabulous concert. So if I had to pick a minuscule moment, because it's not like I haven't tried high-fiving people since
also,
that didn't want to like
could
high-five.
You also stop the guy who touched my ass during that? Sorry.
Yeah.
This was like a regular clean video until I just, sorry about
she
that.
She said the word, but.
Sorry.
But basically we were at a thing and some guy like danced past her and like danced up to
and
her butt.
And started touching me.
And we were like, what is
And
happening.
The best part is, like, listen, I know that I'm Shomariya and I don't touch people, but all the ladies around me did not know that. And yet they were all over that guy getting him off
yeah.
and saying, go away.
All these strangers were like,
are you okay? Exactly.
That's weird. Like, it's not normal anymore. And it's not normalized anymore for a guy
it's
to like,
amazing.
Dance up on you.
Yeah. It was so good. I felt
back
so good.
When we were in college, that would have been okay. And
oh,
normal.
He's hitting on you.
Oh, he's hitting on you. Maybe if he dances up on you for more than a few seconds, he'll buy you a drink.
Mm.
And I'm like, I don't want to let someone touch
Gross.
Me to get a free drink. That's
you know,
weird.
I like when people say hello from the front.
Yeah, that's
Rather
weird.
Than
don't
from the
touch
back.
Me. I don't even like to be touched by people I know.
Correct. Fair.
Let alone that's by fair. A stranger. And not to mention if you throw in that you're a religious Jew, then you don't want to be touched ever.
Yeah, thanks.
Like
until I'm not getting any
consent.
Action. Exactly. Except like
why
creepily.
Do you have to be a religious Jew to say the words, I don't want to be touched without my consent by
thanks.
A stranger?
Right, thanks.
This got weird. We're going to do a little wrap up in a moment.
Fiction,
speculative fiction. We're going to do a little wrap up in a moment. Enjoy one more musical interlude. Wow.
Just words.
Words.
We were waiting for the episode to upload, and we had a very long discussion about books. I want to say off camera, but no, it's off recording.
Off mic. Yeah.
So just in case you wonder what we do when we're not chatting with you guys, is that we're doing the same thing.
Well, just as a reminder, that's how this podcast started. Someone said to me, like, why do you do this podcast? They go, because we were doing this anyway.
Right.
We were literally every Shabbat sitting around talking about books.
It's true.
Yes. And now we're talking about books, but also getting advanced reader copies to review. So it's like
more talking about books
while talking about books. Correct. So it's like what we were doing, but like you get to listen.
I've made my hobby sustainable.
Yes. You've found a way to sustain your talking about books and
recommendations,
reading books hobby.
Not just free access. Like it's not just that, but the recommendations have got me set for like a good long
time. Oh, yeah, yeah, yeah. Send us your recommendations always. Yes. And then also send us your books.
And if you were going to time travel, what would you do? Would you go sightseeing? Would you use it like a vacation to sightsee to some special time?
So here's the thing.
Would you change something? So leave us a voicemail with what you would do.
But we are like living in the best time in history.
To live, but you want to visit somewhere cool?
And just see it?
Yeah.
Can you imagine? So, I mean, I feel like we're going to go a lot of like, I would want to witness Torah from Har Sinai.
Right.
Just so I could say like, hey, guess what? We have evidence now. This isn't like the golden plates in Mormonism.
Oh my gosh. Okay. Now I have another book idea.
Yeah.
For a Jewish travel company that just arranges time travel visits to Har Sinai for like bored, like Upper West Side, like folks who just.
You'll flush it out.
Yeah. Like they'll go, you know, you want to go destination for Pesach, a destination wedding. Like we got destinations for you.
Destination, like Har Sinai.
Miami is so last year. Yeah. Like everyone's going to Har Sinai this year.
We're going to Har Sinai. That's our destination trip for Chol-a-Moed.
That's right.
We're going to have the Seder like at the Yom Suf. It's going to be great.
Could you imagine?
A little bit scary. You know, we're learning Nachiomi, right? I don't know if you're... Yeah. And it's really amazing how there's so much death and, like, war.
Yeah.
And I don't think any of us could handle seeing
that. I would not go there.
No. But we really live in the best time.
But I would love to do, like, a culinary one, like, taste the mun, the Korban Pesach.
I mean, yes. And what's funny is unlike other things, I don't feel like going back to that would actually affect history.
Right.
Because that's so predetermined, right? Like there's so much destiny in that. Like just don't make me a spy because then I'll be like, let's go in.
It seems real nice.
It seems really great. And then the whole wandering the desert thing will go away because I'll be
who
like,
doesn't
come on,
want
guys.
Giant grapes.
Well, that's why that we were learning in Nachum the other day that maybe what they meant by send in a different type of spy than the last time was send in women, right? That's what Rabbi Franz suggests. Seattleite Rabbi Franz.
Because we can see potential.
Yes.
And we take potential and make it reality.
Yes. And he said also like, yeah, women see potential. Women are more optimistic. It's kind of like going apartment hunting and the man looks around and he's like, oh yeah, this building's older. And meanwhile, a woman walks in. She's like, this is so cute. I could really live in this.
And move the wall, open the window, change the door.
It's an optimism thing. But also there was, Rabbi Fran was talking about the saying that women are more connected to the land itself. Like they just have a more natural affinity and connection to the land. In addition to the fact that women are more optimistic and more like, let's try this, let's do this. Like, it's going to be okay. Right. Like, come on guys, let's go for it. Now that we're here, we don't want to leave.
That's cool.
Can you imagine being sent into the future, like homeland of the Jews and then being forced to leave it a few days later? You'd be sad.
I don't know. You know what? Just to admit that I lived in Israel for almost a year before I felt the magic pull.
Really?
Yeah, because for the first year, I was like, I've been to other foreign countries. Mm-hmm. I've been places where I wasn't the majority, where I didn't speak the language or read. And I just saw signs that just were, and I couldn't read them. And that was my experience in Israel. And then after a year of like really like visiting and reading about it and learning about it and really being more immersed, then I was like, okay, I want to stay forever. And actually it was Chol HaMoed Pesach. And I had to ask my Rav, I'm like, okay, so I'm definitely staying here forever. Should I keep one day, last days of Pesach? And he's like,
not yet.
Okay, so no, but well, I see where you're going with this.
It's like that now, isn't it? Like, because the majority of the Jews live in the land of Israel, that a lot of people say that if you are there for the Chag, that you're only supposed to keep one day.
There are some folks who say that, but because I'd started with 2 days, he said I should finish with 2 days, but the next yontiv I could start with 1 day because I'd already, like, I'd made the decision.
One
like,
day.
I was coming.
I had my Israeli cousin staying with us once for a hug, and on the second day, she's like, you know that I'm not keeping anything, right? So, like, I'm going to ring your dishwasher, and I'm going to refill your hot water machine for you, and you don't get to ask me. I'm just going to start doing it, and leave if you don't want to know. And I'm like, okay, bye. Like, this is great. She's like, well, I just need dishes. Like, I need my stuff to be done. I'm like, this is amazing. Yeah, it was pretty awesome. Thank you, Charlotte. That was really cool to have an Israeli cousin with me for a hug.
Okay. So Jewish speculative fishing, I've got some pretty amazing ideas.
Now you have a really – don't steal it. Wait, hold on. We've got to do our – oh, we just copyrighted it.
On you know what? Listen.
Page someone, of copyright books.
There is enough potential here that more than one person could write this story.
That's true.
So
it's true. The world is big. If you really if you look out there at the number of people who are writing – books with Jewish poison magic and pastries? Poison pastry shops.
I'm just saying.
And the fact that so many people are getting published with similar, like you can make an entire genre just out of one idea. Love it. I do love it. I would love to one day just have a stack on the shelf of just books that feature Shadim, right? Yes. Like these are all Jewish demonology books.
Yes.
And they're all like middle grade and YA and it's all lined up together.
I've been getting a lot of people to listen to Throwing Shade. I have a few friends who are like listening because the number of podcasts and things that you can listen to with your children in the car, when you feel like you're learning something, you feel like you're accomplishing something, you know, so.
It's limited. So I'm listening to my cousin Shani Terrigan do a weekly Parsha podcast called Women in Wellness. It's a Parsha podcast. You can find it on Spotify. It is fantastic. She connects each Parsha to women's health. And this week she ended up talking about getting your BRCA testing.
Yes,
she even said at the end, she's like, I know I've already done it, but I still feel compelled having this conversation to do it again. Like if I'm at home, she's interviewing a doctor and she's like, if I'm at home listening to this podcast, I want to press pause and make an appointment because it's so compelling.
Yes.
And then the big reveal was that Rav Tendler, who in the 90s said that you shouldn't get it, BRCA, because it might, there's nothing you can do about it. If you do have the gene, this is for people who are carrying a gene for breast or ovarian cancer.
Right.
Ashkenazim are supposed to be getting this test, men and women.
It took my grandma, my great grandmother. Yeah,
to get the genetic test. We're all supposed to be getting it.
Yeah.
So now we'll know if our kids are carrying it because it's only 2% of people are carrying it.
Right.
And if you are, you can take steps to prevent your 50% chance of getting cancer. Right. Take it down to between 70 and 90% chance
more
of not getting it.
More frequent scans.
More frequent scans.
You
more
know,
frequent
some lifestyle visits, changes.
Some surgeries if necessary.
Yep.
And they called Rabbi Frand, and Rabbi Frand has changed his ruling. He says now he feels it is a chiyuv daraisa. It is an obligation to get the BRCA genetic testing. Rev Tendler, not Rev Friend. And that is the update. So I immediately like ended the podcast and I was like, okay, I'm calling Swedish, the hospital, and immediately scheduling, like getting a referral. And it's according to the Affordable Care Act, everyone insurance is required to cover it.
That's great.
Yes.
Right. So you might as well. You should do it. Take your health seriously.
So that is what I'm listening to. Everyone should be listening to the Parsha podcast. I'm also listening to Nafiomi and Throwing Shade.
I'm doing Dafiomi. So for the next 7.5 years, that's all I'm listening to.
I have a little bit of a shorter.
Right. It's like over an hour. So I'm listening to a podcast where he goes in. He like, it actually has a thing where it highlights the text as he's going through. It's like, I'm learning it inside, but through a podcast.
Yeah.
It takes over an hour. So that's.
Okay.
All the free time I have at the moment. I'm not even reading as much because that's what I'm doing.
Because you're listening.
I'm listening to that. Mm-hmm. And sometimes I do a crossword puzzle while I'm listening just because I need to like keep all parts of my brain active.
I can't do that when I'm learning. I'm listening to the Nachiomi one, which is only 12 to 15 minute episodes, which is great.
Yeah.
And the Shoftim one is particularly really good. And I can't do anything else while I'm listening. Like I'll miss something.
Yeah. No, I hear that. I have to... So I have to keep my mind from wandering. So I have to do two things at once, but both things have to not require actually thinking about other things. Does that make sense?
So one of those things is a crossword puzzle?
Yes.
Is it the easiest crossword puzzle in the world?
New York Times Monday.
I guess. It's not Sunday.
Yeah, no. The Sunday would not be.
That's such a strange choice. So that's what I'm listening to. That's what you're listening to. And then, of course, History Chicks podcast is great.
Yes.
How do we end up making recommendations? I don't know. We just do this.
Here we are. This is it.
This is what we do. You have just listened to a classic cooperative interruption.
Correct. Then you wonder why it takes me a while to get our summary with like all the things we talk about because it just like I have to re-listen to it and pause many times and like write down, oh my God, we talked about
this. Oh my God, what are you going to do about today?
It's going to be a lot.
It's going to be a lot of books mentioned.
Yeah.
Plus the fact that we mentioned things that aren't written yet.
Now, we've had other times we've mentioned over 50 books. So I think today was less, much less.
Challenge accepted. Well, thank you for joining us today. If you want to find us on Instagram, Kiddish Book Club, and on Twitter, I am Hoffman Jess.
And I'm Yo Neat DM everywhere.
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 Everywhere. Volcano, Moshienu, Volcano, 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 Moshienu, Volcano, 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 Moshienu, Volcano.